Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Bob Breitall. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review.
This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 161 for comics originally released on September 8th, 2010. Actually, I think it was September 9th, because it was Labor Day.
Yes.
So, correction there. That actually caused me, I don't want to say problems, but, you know, I went to the UPS store on Monday, and I'm going to my box. It's like, there's nothing there. And the guy's going to the back room to get the package. He's like, there's nothing there. It's like, oh, yes, Labor Day last week.
Yeah, so I don't really get them on Tuesday, and I didn't get them until Wednesday.
Yeah, I got mine Tuesday. I've had a few other things to be doing this week, so I've only read the books we're talking about. I haven't read anything else. But starting us off in DC is Adventure Comics 518. This is featuring Superboy and Legion in the main feature and the Atom in the backup slot. And overall, I've been enjoying what they've been doing here. You know, I like the Legion stuff. It's cool seeing some early Legion stories. I felt there was one or two things in a previous issue that Levitz did that didn't really meet with my approval. It was well told. I just didn't like what he told. There was something about this issue that really felt like it was setting something up or serving some other purpose than just telling a story. And I'm not entirely sure what it was, but it felt to me like this particular issue was kind of just going through the motions. And not that there was a point to the story itself.
It seemed like it was, I didn't feel exactly that way, but it seemed like it was kind of like a downtime, you know, kind of in-between action arc kind of thing. I mean, there was a little bit of action in it, but, you know, the whole with Superboy and the museum and, you know, all the pages they spent with Projectra and, you know, stuff like that. It just seemed like there was a lot of setup kind of stuff or backstory that is going to pay off at some point.
Well, I think that's what I was feeling, because it was not bad. I mean, the main story with Legion going after this one guy, that was okay. We got some decent action. The subplot with Phantom Girl and Superboy and the museum and stuff, that was okay. It was interesting. The subplot with Dream Girl and stuff, interesting, but it was... And there was some payoff in terms of both the Phantom Girl, Superboy arc and the main Legion stuff, less so with the Dream Girl. But you're right, it felt like it was kind of a between major things. Stuff happened, but I didn't get the sense that what was happening was really uber important and just critical to the Legion. And it wasn't, I mean, maybe it was kind of a filling time kind of a sense I got. Things were happening, but it felt a little perfunctory and kind of a going through the motions versus, wow, this is really changing everything or whatever. And certainly that can't happen every issue, and I get that. The one thing I will say on the art is it's good, it's solid, it's, you know, telling the story effectively. It's just kind of average art. There are a few places where I really felt if this had, say, Gary Frank on it, who just nails the young Christopher Reeve and stuff like that, that might have given it just enough extra boost that it would have clicked a little better with me. Again, nothing wrong with this art, but nothing special about this art either.
I liked it. I liked it as an issue. It really seems like, and here's where I'm curious to hear what listeners might have to say on this, because it's certainly an old school Legion. It feels like a, you know, step back 20 years to when Paul Levitz was writing Legion. I don't remember exactly, you know, how long ago it was. It was a long time ago, but it really is a not current storytelling style. Not that that's a bad thing. It just feels like I'm being taken back when I read it.
Well, it's funny because I would say that, I mean, I agree with what you're saying in terms of it taking me back. I would say Levitz was doing it around the 80s, mid-80s. This, to me, takes me back to the reprints of the Legion that were in Adventure Comics when it was in the Digest format. Because he's doing his standard ABC kind of storytelling structure, where you've got a main plot, which in this case would be the Legion going after the bad guy. Another plot subplot that's been kind of in the middle of things, which I would say is the Superboy Phantom Girl stuff. And then the C plot, which is kind of getting introduced, which is being the Dream Girl stuff. And what he does is he'll go with the A plot for a bit as he's building up the B plot, which will eventually become the A plot as the C plot becomes the B plot, because the original A plot is wound down and gets replaced by a new C plot. And just kind of three stories kind of going almost in parallel slants, if you will, overlapping. And that's a gross simplification of his writing style, but that's the basic approach he took. And it works acceptably well here. In this case, I didn't think any of the three plot lines were at a pivotal or really exciting point in their story. But both the storytelling style is old, and of course, this era of the Legion is even older. So it is kind of an odd combination of that for a modern comic.
Which is actually interesting. I was kind of meaning to ask that. I mean, since Legion is, you know, kind of bounce this off you, since Legion is set in the future, right, the 31st century or whatever, you know, 1,000 years forward, is this supposed to be, you know, the Legion that we had been reading about, you know, at, you know, some point previously before, you know, the current round of reboots, you know, they were a little more grown up and stuff. This seems like it's kind of rolling the clock back a bit to more of the early point in their career.
Yes, this is, first off, the original Legion prior to the... And I hesitate to use the term reboots, because while they kind of were, you had the original Legion back in the day. It got up to a point where, in story, they retooled the timeline, wound up with the 5 years later stuff, the Archie gang of Legionnaires, essentially, which I enjoyed too, but it was a different timeline, different take. That came out of, I think, Zero Hour. And then they did another reboot in continuity when they did the Legion Titan stuff, going into the Mark Waid era of Legion. And then, of course, with Legion of Three Worlds, they've kind of taken us back to that original Legion and said the other two still exist in different timelines or whatever, and one or two members actually moved over. This, to me, is very much set in the Superboy era of the Legion. In other words,
right,
the original Legion...
Which is when they were first kind of starting up, you know.
Exactly, the younger time. Whereas Legion of Superheroes is more, quote-unquote, contemporary Legion. In other words, we've rolled forward past all the other stories we've seen already.
Right, which they're kind of telling parallel, different stories set in different eras of the Legion's history, which would, unless there's some kind of time travel thing going on, which isn't completely out of the question, means you shouldn't see Adventure and Legion crossing over with one another.
Right, and I believe they're going to be wrapping up the Legion and Superboy stuff here shortly and moving on to something else, but I'm not positive of that.
Do you want to jump back and talk about the Atom story?
With the Atom stuff, this is where having shorter story segments really didn't serve the story for me. This is the middle chapter of a backup feature. They don't really have the time and the space to kind of really reset the scene effectively, whatever. There wasn't a huge amount of story progress here, but I felt there were a couple of key plot points. I'm kind of curious about the colony, but because I didn't think they were reset up in this issue effectively, I'm like, no, what were they about or whatever? And part of it for me is 12 pages of story here, or 10 maybe, I didn't count actually, but a very finite set. And since I've read the previous issue, I've read like 100 other comics easily, probably, you know, 150 or 200. So I just don't have the clear recollection of the previous installment of this. And I think what they're doing here is good, is interesting, but this is another one where I felt the art was effective in telling the story, but nothing great. It was very kind of journeyman-type art, and I don't mean that in a bad way, because there are a lot of artists that just cannot tell a story. The artists, both here and in the main feature, are doing that well, but I'm thinking the art is serving the story, not enhancing the story.
I can kind of see that. I mean, the art for me is, it's serviceable, right? I mean, it's not knocking my socks off. I do like Jeff Lemire's story here. I mean, I like how he's, you know, kind of telling the Atom story. I was kind of interested in you know, what happened in this segment. And, you know, nature of the backup, you don't get that long of a thing going on necessarily. But I did like, you know, these opponents. They've got the shrinking belt technology, but there's some stuff going on there that was kind of interesting. They, you know, Jeff cut off on a good, you know, kind of cliffhanger moment. He moved the story along in the 8 pages. I guess what I'm saying is, given, is it 8 pages or 10 pages? We got 2, 4, 6, 8, 10. So he's got 10 pages. I mean, given that he's only got 10 pages to work with, I think he's doing a pretty decent job of, you know, moving the story along, having some key points, and leaving it on a nice cliffhanger note where, you know, it's not like it's just a really long story chopped into, you know, incomprehensible 10-page segments. He's doing a good pacing job, I guess, is what I'm saying there.
And I would agree with that, but I can't help feel that I would be enjoying the story more if he had larger increments to be telling it in. He's doing an effective job with the space he's got. I just don't think he's got enough space.
Right.
And because he's got to be kind of tight with it and tell an actual, you know, decent story chunk in those 10 pages, you know, he doesn't really have the leverage to, okay, the colony is this, whatever. And even if he did, if you were to read those back to back, you'd be feeling like, hey, he's taking too much space to do that and not really moving the story forward. It's, to me, it's an aspect of the nature of a backup story and nothing about right. The writing. Because I think he's doing a good job. He's got some interesting ideas here. And really, the colony is kind of a cross between Hive and Ant-Man, literally, which is kind of a cool idea. The other thing, just as a Easter egg or whatever, if you look at the second page of the story, we've got the Atom, you know, checking out the professor, making sure he's still alive or whatever. And there's a book on the floor there. Title is Sweet. It's got a picture of a tooth. It's like, okay, nice nod to Jeff Lemire's other work.
Cute, I didn't notice it.
And exactly, it doesn't get in the way of the story at all. I'm enjoying this. It's some good Atom action.
I think it's one of the better backups I've seen in any of the DC books. I'm enjoying it more than pretty much any other one I can think of off the top of my head, just on pacing and writing. So I think they're doing a good job on it.
I'm glad they've cut back on the number of backup features they've got, because I felt like over in, I guess is it JSA or JSA All-Stars, where they're doing the Our Man Jesse Quick, or Our Man Liberty Bell backup feature. Yeah, that's been on like 10 installments or something insane. And it's a fun story, but it's like, just finish it already. Whereas this one, you know, earlier in the segment, in the installments or whatever, certainly helps. But I would say this is making more effective use of the backup than most of the others we've seen. But it also has, frankly, a more interesting character than half the backups have.
I mean, right.
The Coven of Three or whatever over in the Titan stuff, that would be a hard sell as a one-shot. You know what I mean? Atom, you do as a one-shot, I can easily see. Which, obviously, they did leading into this.
Right. You know, 4 out of 5 for me. You know, it's a good solid book, and it's well done. Yeah, for Legion fans, I think it's a must read. I mean, if you're not really, if you're not a Legion fan, you know, it might be a good thing to like try out to see if you like the Legion. But if you like have tried the Legion and you're actively not a Legion fan, there's nothing here for you, really, right?
I would say if you're not a Legion fan, I mean specifically a not Legion fan, I should say, obviously skip the book. If you're a Legion fan, get it. If you're on the fence, not sure, I would say pick up the main Legion book, not this. As far as the Atom goes, they're going to package the backup feature up separately eventually. I think it's worth reading as it's coming out, but, you know, not at the $3.99 price point just for the backup. But, again, I'm enjoying the Legion stuff, too. For me, the Legion was a 3 out of 5. The backup, I gave that a 3 out of 5, too. Too little of it, and the art was so-so. So, for me, this book is a strong 3 out of 5 overall, but it didn't make it past that.
Do you want to move on to Invaders Now from Marvel?
Sure.
This is an interesting book. I mean, it's kind of a spin-out of that. I mean, it definitely has ties to the Alex Ross series that have gone before. And, you know, these characters are interesting characters. Now, maybe I missed something, but I thought Spitfire was a vampire.
She is.
And it is, there's no indication of that in this book. I mean, it's nighttime when she's doing the thing with Union Jack, I guess.
I'm pretty sure she can be out in the daylight, though, but I'm not positive of that. While it's not in here, it's not relevant to the story, it's also not contradicted here either.
Yeah.
What I found interesting about this is I thought it was kind of a logical and organic continuation of what's going on in the Invaders and Avengers Invaders and the Torch series and that whole line of stuff. And it's kind of cool that we've got all the Invaders kind of back in action these days. And this issue was very much setting the stage for the story, which is kind of funny for a 5-issue storyline. And the basic structure of this issue is the Invaders are gathered up for the mission, and the mission is set up at the end. And they're all paired off, which has kind of a classic, you know, golden silver age kind of a feel to the story in that respect. And we get into the story in pairs, you know, first with Bucky and Toro, then with, what was the next pair? Submariner and Human Torch, then with Spitfire and Union Jack. And there was some action for the sake of action, but, you know, it worked, and it wasn't all just battle scenes or whatever. But what I liked is in the middle of all that action, and kind of before some of it started, we got a ton of information about these characters. We got a real feel for them. You know, where they're at right now, what their status quo is, some of their backstory. And I felt enough to really start to care about these characters. You know, not necessarily to fall in love and say, oh, I've got to read everything about Toro now or whatever, but there's at least enough there that you get a sense of who all of these characters are. And I felt that information flowed kind of well in the story. It didn't feel like exposition.
Yeah, they had a nice kind of like men at a time moment with Bucky and Toro, you know, with kind of like all the technological advances that have happened and stuff. They see the guy with the Bluetooth.
Yeah, and that was just kind of funny and stuff. It's like, oh, these crazy people know he's on the phone. The structure of the story worked well for me. I was a little, I don't want to say let down or chagrined by the fact that it ends with the, and next issue will really start the main story, because they give enough of what's going on to kind of set that up. And given that these are characters that, in a lot of respects, unless you've been reading Avengers Invaders or The Torch, you're not really going to be that familiar with where they're at now. Namor and Cap being the obvious exceptions there. I thought it was a smart move for them to structure the story the way they did. You know, and they end on a decent enough beat, a story beat, that it's like, okay, I want to see what follows next. I kind of can guess what's going to follow next. But overall, this worked well for me, which is a little surprising, because story structure is kind of similar to how Freedom Fighters was last week that we talked about. But I felt this issue worked a lot better for me, because I felt we got more character in the action sequences and not just random fight scenes.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that may be being kind of harsh on the Freedom Fighters, because I thought that was a good book, too. But this one, I think somebody could come out of it justifiably interested in the Invaders.
I liked it. This particular issue, I mean, I really kind of gave it a 3 out of 5, though. I mean, it was kind of like a middle-of-the-road issue. It was a lot of setup. I mean, for only a 5-issue series, I mean, I kind of feel like some of those the previous series that I think ran 12 issues had more happen in the first issue than this one, where it's 20% of the series.
I would agree with that, and I think, again, that's a fair, you know, statement of 5 issues, and you lead up to the start of the story but don't really start the story. You just gather the team. I would be much harsher on that aspect of it if I felt they hadn't done such a good job pairing the characters, establishing the relationships, establishing in the backstory, and setting up the team. So, I mean, I completely see where you're coming from on that, though. And I think that's a, a valid, criticism. It's kind of
No, it wasn't a bad series. I mean, it was good, and it's for people who like these characters. You like Captain America, you like Submariner. Give it a try.
Well, I would say it's kind of a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation, because if they hadn't spent the time setting up the team, it'd be a harder sell.
True.
Because I think even if you're not a huge fan of Cap or Namor or some of these other characters, there's enough in here, like I said, to potentially turn you into a fan. It's a question of, are people going to try it or not? And since it's got, Cap, Namor, well, actually both Caps, Steve Rogers, I mean, a number of characters that have followings, I think it'll get a chance. For me, this was a solid 4 out of 5. I think the art was solid. It could have been a little better in a few places, but it worked perfectly well. And I'm looking forward to seeing where this goes when this team gets out in the field. It should be a lot of fun.
Okay. Do you want to move on to our indie pick, which is Lucid number 1 from Archaea Studio Press?
Yeah, this is under their Black Label imprint, which, off the top of my head, I'm not entirely sure if that has any particular meaning or not. This is one where I pre-ordered only the first issue, so I still got to kind of decide if I'm going to continue with the series or not.
I'm kind of curious how you're going to feel about this one. I mean, this one's right up my alley. It's got, like, the magic. It's got some... I mean, it's set in current times, but it's kind of like a world where there is magic. The art is got kind of a manga feel to it, to me. I mean, this is the kind of art I've seen in some mangas, but I like it. So it's not something that I have any problem with. In fact, I quite enjoyed the first issue, and reading through it, kind of setting up the world here with Matthew D and, his sorcery and kind of the, what's going to have to happen to keep these, kind of whatever incursions, out of their world, through these mystical gates and stuff. I really liked it, and I gave it a 4 out of 5. In fact, I had done the same thing. I had only ordered the first issue, and based on the strength of this issue, I went and have added the other ones to my pull list since.
Interesting. Frankly, I'm still on the fence on this one, because I thought the story was good. I thought it was interesting. The art style, let's talk about that for a minute or two. I didn't particularly care for it. The style. It was perfectly good, serviceable art, well done for what the style it was trying to take. It's just not a style I tend to gravitate towards.
Right. I can appreciate that. I mean, it's like I said, art's very subjective. I've seen this kind of look before, and I don't mind it. I liked it.
Yeah. And typically it tends to be on what I would consider lower selling indie books.
I don't know that I would agree with that.
Okay, fair enough. I mean, you read more manga than I do, and maybe it shows up more there.
When I hear lower selling indie books said like that, it's like that usually denotes kind of a poor amateurish style, and I don't think that's what this is.
No, and I don't mean to convey that.
I think they're hitting exactly the kind of style that they're trying to hit.
And it's, I would agree with that.
It's an art style that is more prevalent over in Japanese manga.
My point was only that this is an art style that generally doesn't seem to click with the mass audience over here. That was all I was trying to convey. The coloring, I felt, was a little murky in places. There was also a few places where it looked like they were using photo reference or computer art or something, which didn't always jive well with the hand-drawn art. And I felt that, particularly with the dark coloring in a few places, the lack of things popping out, which I'm sure was the effect they were trying to go for, it felt like I was almost seeing the story through a fog, if you will. In other words, the art didn't enhance the story for me in a few places. I felt I was going almost just strictly through the dialogue and not really getting as much out of the art as I could or should be. Certainly, there were other places where I thought the art was very good. Some of the effects they were doing with the portal and stuff like that were very well done. The use of the glyphs for the magic and stuff, cool design choice. I thought that worked really well. So stylistically, there were a couple of choices they made that I thought were really good. And while it's not a style I like of the art, it was very functional and served the story in terms of depicting it, with my complaints about the coloring aside. Because there are a few things that literally I think it lost in the background. I liked the concept of the story, the overall flow and structure of it, the way it was paced and stuff was good. It just stopped a little short of completely fleshing out the concept and the story to completely hook me. I'm interested. I may continue with this. I may not. Like I said, I'm still on the fence. It's the kind of thing, if the art had really clicked with me, I'd definitely be picking up more. If the art had completely, you know, tanked with me, I wouldn't even consider getting more.
And I can appreciate that, because, again, if the art had not clicked with me, I would not be continuing on with it. I mean, it's a strong element of a comic book. You know, you got the art and the writing. And if one half of that totally blows you away, right? It's like your favorite art that you've ever seen, you can forgive a weak story. If it's the greatest story concept or whatever you've ever read, you can forgive the art. But if it's a good story, you need to at least have art that you like, you know. And if it's good art, you need to have it, you know, it's not like the greatest, you need to have at least a story that you're, you know, really into. So,
well, like, go to the middle of the book with the staple and look at the right-hand page, the first panel on the bottom there. We've got the president, and there are two people in the background, but, I mean, they're just about invisible in the background. Now, that's for that particular scene.
Yeah, and I could appreciate your comment about the coloring there, because the effects and stuff, it, you know, they're trying to make it dark, and it does obfuscate what's going on. Like, even when you flip to the next page, and I can understand that they're trying to illustrate, you know, what is being talked about, but that predominantly blue color palette and, you know, the way that that's conveyed. The colors on each page, while I like the art style, I'm not a big fan of, you know, where you've got two pages that have a predominantly monochromatic color palette, and that happens time and again throughout this book. The way the colorist is tending to color, it's a very subdued color palette and an overuse of the monochromatic page theme kind of thing.
Even beyond that, flip another two pages to where we get to Matthew D's apartment. You know, the first panel we get kind of him silhouetted in the door. Okay, that's stylistic, that's good, but the rest of the panel is presumably got the room in there, but you can't really see it. It's so dark. Go to the bottom two panels on the next page there where we're looking at Matt.
You can barely even see his silhouette.
Yeah. You know, so I get they're trying to do moody and stylized and stuff, and again, the line-drawn art, good, but the coloring, the way it's pulled out of the foreground, the background, and all that's blurred together is ineffective. And this is something that, frankly, I would suspect on a computer monitor might have looked a lot better. But again, you flip another one to where we get to the...
Now, interesting, I mean, there's not a colorist listed, so I'm going to guess that that Anna, and I'm going to butcher her last name, it's Wysacek, maybe?
Wysacek? We'll go with that.
We'll go with that. I'm going to guess that she's doing her own coloring on this, and I think, you know, that's something that, you know, and you make a good point that when you're seeing color that is fluorescing at you on a monitor, it's very different, you know, sometimes, especially in the more subtle tonations, than when you print it out and you're seeing it printed on a page. And, you know, that's something I think that she'll need to learn with time, is, you know, the coloring, I think, does not do the art a favor. And I'm suspecting that if I saw the line art on this, you know, it would be both clearer and more enjoyable on that. I mean, I still liked it, but I can completely see your point on the coloring. It does seem to detract from the understandability of the art.
And that's part of the thing, along with the style of the art, that gave, for me, the feeling of kind of that quote-unquote indie art style. because there are a few places where, you know, and this is one of them where I felt on a technical level it wasn't conveying the story as well as it could in terms of just sheer production values and more experience, i.e. seeing how this printed, learning from that, etc., will enhance the artist going forward. And that was one of the main reasons I'm kind of still on the fence. It's like, I like the story well enough, but not enough that I just have to read more. I thought the art was okay. So, like I said, I'm undecided. It's one that I think certainly has a lot of potential story-wise. I'm willing to make some concessions in my personal taste in art, because they chose to go with a style that, you know, I like a more cleaner style. It's just how I am. And there's nothing wrong with this style. It just doesn't click with me. But I'm willing to say, okay, let's set that aside. Do I want to go forward with the story? And like I said, I don't know. For me, this is a 3 out of 5. I think there's certainly a audience for it. I just haven't decided if I'm part of that audience or not.
I had a couple other things I wanted to cover really quick. I know we're all comics all the time, but I think I pointed out on our forum at one point, there was this comic called Apama, APAMA, and it was had very John Buscema-ish art to it, kind of a superhero thing. Well, that is related to a very indie movie that came out called Hero Tomorrow. And I just wanted to point that out because I did get a hold of a review copy of that movie. It's called Hero Tomorrow, and it's Hero Tomorrow, and it's called A Trippy Comic Shop Romance, The Superhero Twist. It's one of these movies that it's worth watching if you're a comics person, just because, you know, it's set in a comic shop. They have a comic shop. It's funny, in the movie they took an empty storefront and they made a comic shop set out of it, and all these indie places like sent them comics to stock this shop. So, you know, you'll see all kinds of, you know, like Dark Horse and, you know, Flaming Carrot or whatever, you know, all, you know, you don't see really any Marvel and DC books, but you see lots of real crazy indie books in this comic shop. And, you know, they have some of these great, you know, comic nerd moments where they're talking about comics and stuff. And, you know, I thought it was a well done movie. You know, it's certainly not high art Hollywood standard movie, but I was very entertained by it, and it was a really cool twist in it that caught me unawares at the end, which, you know, a lot of times you see stuff coming in movies, you know, a lot of the Hollywood movies, they telegraph the endings a mile away, you know, and yeah. This one, you know, to their credit, they caught me with a nice twist in it. So I thought it was a well done thing, and it, you know, for a comic fan, it was kind of fun. So we can put a link to that site in the show notes for people to check out. And then, you know, the thing that drew me to that was the online comic with the John Buscema art, and we'll have a link to that also. On that note, my other comment for this week is related to the Dark Horse Conan newspaper strips volume 1 that they came out with. And this is reprinting the first part of continuity on the Conan comic strip that came out back in the late 70s. This is from September 1978 to December 1979. And it's one of these reprints that it's kind of that landscape format. You know, it's maybe about 12 inches wide, the book, and it's, you know, about 9 inches high. So it's like 12 by 9, but it's in that newspaper strip format, but kind of oversized. And the problem I've got with it is the art is really poorly reproduced. I mean, the line work is really murky. And what it almost looks like is, you know, when you reproduce a regular, you know, you see an absolute or something and the art's reproduced very large, it's like, wow, look at all that detail, because, you know, that stuff was originally drawn mostly at the very large size, and then they shrink it down for publication.
Uh-huh.
The way this stuff looks, I'm wondering if either A, the original art was produced smaller, or they did not reproduce this book from the original art, but instead went and pulled you know, the newspaper strips or something and blew them up, because, you know, all the fine detail in the line work is gone. It's not there. And it's, you know, John Buscema and Ernie Chan are the artists, and it's written by Roy Thomas. So, I mean, it's classic Conan stuff, you know, for the newspaper strip, but I was really disappointed in the reproduction of the art in this thing.
Well, that's too bad, but I can definitely see where you're coming from on that.
So just, you know, if anybody gets a chance to pick one of these up in the comic book shop, just kind of open it up and flip through it to kind of see what I'm talking about and see if you agree with me and let me know. I mean, it just really looks, I mean, and I'll enjoy reading the stuff again, because I don't think that my paper carried Conan back in the day when this was coming out. So I don't think I've seen this before, and I'm going to read it, and I'm sure I'll enjoy it anyway, but it's just disappointing compared to some of the other newspaper strip reproductions I've been reading lately, you know, that have been coming out from IDW, for instance. You know, they've been doing Dick Tracy and Terry and the Pirates and, you know, things like that. It just seems like the, and maybe it's just Milton Caniff's art style is different, but I mean, it just seems cleaner reproduction. Maybe they did a little more post-production to clean it up or something. I don't know.
Interesting. Cool. So, anything else? Or does that pretty much do it?
That's pretty much what I've got.
Cool.
Join us next week when we discuss Unwritten number 17 from DC Vertigo, X-Factor number 209 from Marvel, and Penny for Your Soul number 3 from Big Dog Inc.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.